What up, everyone? This episode of the Swung Tire Podcast is brought to you by ButcherBox. You know what I'm looking forward to in 2021? Meat. Straight up meat. Just one word, meat. Because there's not a lot really to look forward to just yet, but I can look forward to meat from ButcherBox, because ButcherBox is the meat delivery subscription that gives me more time for what matters most. Each month, they send me a box of the highest quality meat for a better price than the grocery store, which gives me more time to spend cooking and sharing delicious meals with my family and my friends. ButcherBox has meat that is free of antibiotics and added hormones. Each box has 9 to 11 pounds of meat, enough for 24 individual meals. It's packed fresh and shipped frozen, vacuum sealed so it stays that way, and I can customize my own box or go with one of their pre-made boxes. Either way, I get exactly what I want. It's a total no-brainer. It's the most affordable and convenient way to get healthy, humanely raised meat. You get the highest quality meat for around $6 a meal, and they even have free shipping nationwide except Alaska and Hawaii. So right now, here's the deal. You get 2 pounds of salmon absolutely free with your first box. If you go to butcherbox.com/tire, that's butcherbox.com/tire, and you can get 2 pounds of salmon completely free with your first box at butcherbox.com/tire. We're also brought to you by Fight Camp. Check this out. The gym sucks, right? The gym is boring. You're just lifting weights, you're doing cardio. What is it for? What if you could learn how to fight at the gym, right? There's nothing more exciting than learning how to fight. I've seen Steven Seagal movies too. That's why people are saying that Fight Camp is the only workout that they've stuck with. Fight Camp provides boxing and kickboxing workouts and tutorials that keep you engaged, learning, excited, and motivated. A program that's never boring and always challenging. Fight Camp brings the boxing gym to your living room with a tech twist. They provide all the gear, top trainers, and a new technology that tracks your punches, everything you need to get great workouts. The boxing workout has always been ranked as one of the best ways to get in shape, and it's honestly one of the most fun ways to combine cardio and strength training. Basically, Fight Camp brings the boxing and kickboxing gym to you with fight-hardened trainers that combine cardio and conditioning in a full-body workout. It's new tech that tracks each punch you throw to measure speed, volume, and output, and you can compete on a leaderboard with people all around the U.S. And now with their recently released Versus mode, you can challenge anyone to a workout, go head-to-head, and see who wins, bringing out the competitive nature in everyone, and it makes your workout so much harder without you even realizing it. Fight Camp is a great holiday gift the entire family can enjoy and get competitive on, and they allow you to pay over time with Affirm financing. Fight Camp offers flexible financing for as low as 0% APR and $0 down. And as a limited time offer, get free shipping and a gift valued up to $109 with every Fight Camp package. Go to joinfightcamp.com/TST. That's joinfightcamp.com/TST and get a free shipping and gift valued up to $109 with your purchase. Bring an authentic boxing and kickboxing gym into your home with Fight Camp. To get your free gift, go to joinfightcamp.com/TST. That's joinfightcamp.com/TST. Lastly, we are brought to you by Off the Record. Listen, folks, never ever plead guilty and always fight your tickets. The speeding ticket system is an economy that is designed to extract money from you for just going where you need to go. Between the police, between the insurance companies, between everyone involved, it's just revenue generation, folks. It's not even about safety. And that's why you should never plead guilty when you get one of these tickets. always go to Off the Record. Off the Record is like an attorney in your pocket. They connect you with qualified attorneys who will fight those tickets and get those points off your record. All 50 states in the union, they cover 97% of the American population. What you do, download Off the Record right now, get it in your pocket, and use code TST10 in the app, or go to offtherecord.com/TST on the web. Then you can upload a photo of your ticket, get assigned a qualified attorney. It's going to fight those tickets, going to get them off your record. They've got a money back guarantee, and they have helped me out with multiple tickets this year in 2020. I wouldn't go anywhere on the highways without them. offtherecord.com/TST or code TST10 on the Off the Record app. Always fight your tickets. All right, folks, on this episode of the podcast, my old pal JF Musial is in studio. We worked together for many, many years on the Drive Network, and even before that at Next New Networks. He is now a filmmaker, the Apex series, and he is back with a docuseries, Pike's Peak on the Edge, airing on the Motor Trend on demand right now. So let's do an hour and a half of radio with JF Musial.
It's just a different show.
We used to listen to Opie and Anthony. The two of us.
Now I podcast with Opie.
It's just remarkable to see how far all of this has come.
Yeah.
From a bunch of fucking idiots from New York going all the way to like...
Isn't it silly?
Yeah.
Are we speeding?
Speeding.
Yeah. No, it's... When I got Sirius XM... Well, no, it was just XM at the time. 2001. Mm-hmm. And I first listened to Opie and Anthony.
They were on K-Rock.
No, I didn't listen to them back in the day. So I was a Stern fan in high school.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about O&A in high school.
Yeah.
And then in college, when I got XM, I learned about O&A. And it was like a whole other thing.
Yeah.
And then I really, really got into like talk radio from that.
You know, Stern to me... I listened to it every day, even as like a fourth grader going to school on the bus ride. I was like, the bus driver was listening to Stern, which is crazy for a guy. And I remember Stern being...
Now they're listening to like Limbaugh.
I know.
I think what's worse?
Well, Central New Jersey Stern, I guess it kind of, that fits the demographic. But it was, I was always impressed by Stern's interview ability. And how good of an interviewer he was, or is still.
Right, he is a good interviewer, I think. Right. I think Opie and Anthony had their own, what they did is they really mastered the formatless show. Mm-hmm. There weren't really there were occasional bits, but they weren't bits. And they'd improv like characters and they would kind of let the guests go a little more freeform and it got a little more, like I wasn't into like the weird sex stuff that much.
Yeah.
It was like a little later.
Sam Adams, St. Patrick's.
No, I came on after that because that was when they got kicked off of regular radio.
It was more
just like the hang with the comics and like Patrice and Jim Norton, who I've kind of grown apart from since then. But at the time, just the shit that he would say about himself. You know what I mean? I guess like I had some like Jewish shame and I was like, you can be successful talking about these horrible things about yourself and you don't need to be ashamed. You can like wear them like a badge. Mm-hmm. And that completely changed the game for me in terms of being a broadcaster.
Yeah, well, okay, so this is what I'll say. I think that they were good at crafting a message to make it seem like it was spontaneous, but it really wasn't.
Probably true.
There were bullets. And I think what we do now, especially... Except you. You still, every time I come into any kind of environment with you, you have no plan.
I have no plan. I have no plan unless I'm working on a Rob Ferretti production, and then I turn into you.
Because you need a plan. Because Rob Ferretti is he will just get on a plane and figure it out as he arrives.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I don't have a lot of a plan, but I just work with people that don't need to be told what they're doing.
Well,
that helps.
I think that's what we do as people. We try to surround ourselves with people that are that complement us or do stuff we can't do.
Yeah, but I don't have a I didn't have like a show plan for this.
No,
it was
no,
like
no,
JF arrives, I feed him a bagel,
I get
and
it.
Then there's 90 minutes of radio.
No, I get it. No, but when I look at like Stern was very good at making it, he as well as ONA, they were both good in their own ways. Obviously, their one was left, one was right, not in a political sense, but they were just two opposite sides of the spectrum. But I always felt like they had a plan. Right, they knew what bullet points they had to get to. Like Stern was very good.
He was more question answer.
He was question, but you knew what he had. He was actually acting as a comedian in a weird way in terms of story structure. I noticed this, and I think who was it? Ferrara, explain this to us in terms of like a comedy set. Like you get up on stage, your entire job as a comedian up front is to get people to trust you.
Right.
The first 5-10 minutes, it's like the simplicity, and you want people to be able to trust you so that you can take them for a journey.
Okay. Right? Yeah, that makes sense.
And Stern, I realized looking back and listening to Stern, old Stern interviews, like he was crafting it. He had in his mind where he wanted to go, and he worked his way backwards to get the questions to get to that point. And I speaking about, I don't even know how we got into this, but just speaking about how we got
talking
into
about
like
influences in radio.
Yeah, just in terms of like interview process, like I credit to them. They made it seem like it was so fluid. And by the way, Vitz A, as you call him, not Vitza, which is his real name. You know, remember Josh?
Yeah, of course.
I told him I was coming
here. Fuck his name up?
You always, for 15 years, you've been saying his name wrong.
Sorry, Josh. I pronounced Josh right.
Yes.
You know how many people call me Farah?
Yeah.
Everybody.
So, he and I were discussing this because there was a recent video or some kind of interview that we were passing around, something, I forgot what it was, but
I just recalled why I called him that, too.
Why?
Because Morningstar calls him that and continues to call him that.
Yes, but that's
and
a joke.
Well, the joke was, you gotta fucking let me in on this shit.
Anyway, Josh and I were speaking about this and we're like, your ability to conduct interviews without a plan is impressive, right? And it still feels as if it's... You're like the new age of like the Stern and ONA like interview process.
Well, that's very complimentary.
No, it is. It is because like think about you, like you were just talking with Vinwicky about like the process of how we even got to this point, right? In the early days with AMO and all that. And it's like, whoa, it's like it has evolved.
Oh yeah.
It really has, and it's impressive.
I'm trying to be, you know, there's a fine balance between the fact that like people come to the Smoking Tire podcast, at least, you know, return listeners come back presumably because they want my perspective on whatever the topic is at hand, right?
Yeah.
And if it's a guest interview, then they would want to see how I interact with that guest versus somebody else. But I'm trying to be better and not like jumping in and stuff like that. But at the same time, like, I find little nuggets that I want to like dig into that sometimes I think are more interesting than the main trajectory of the conversation. And that's how you end up with some really interesting stuff.
Finding the thread. You find the thread. That's
what like I think active hosts kind of do. There are people who will ask a question and then let others talk until they're fucking done talking. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be good radio. By some people's standards, that's amazing radio. By other people's standards, it's not. Okay, and so I try to let the really interesting thoughts flesh out. And if I see something that's even more interesting, I try and latch on it and bend.
Right. Yeah.
Some people don't like that I do that.
No, but that's a good interview, right?
It's just
and
what you do.
I think the only difference between what you and I do is that when I interview people, like, and I'm never on camera for interviewing all the people I interview. I have the ability to edit it.
Yeah, you take that. You can take the left in the edit room later. You don't have. You can let them fucking go for 3 hours and go listen.
Yeah, but you still want them to.
Press the pause button on the camera. We're gonna let them go, but we don't really need this.
All of our cameras have the red light disabled just for that purpose.
Yeah.
Because we, you know, and over all the years of interviewing, you realize, okay, he's not comfortable or she's not comfortable,
right.
And then you find ways to like loosen them up and then get them into it. But that's actually one of the things I love doing. Actually, it's one of the things that it's why I keep doing what I'm doing more than
and also
else.
Editing. Like you can make all but the most fucking moronic people sound pretty decent if you can just get them to take pauses between sentences.
True. Mm.
I mean, if you can convince a person to take a second and a half in between every single sentence, then it does not matter how dumb the shit is that comes out of their mouth. You can make it work.
Well, if you there is a point. You need enough raw materials.
Right. But like, but you can make some rambling, fucking stammering idiot sound okay if you can just get them to take a pause once in a while.
Because you stitch it together, yeah.
When I started learning, when I learned to edit, that I got way better at hosting almost overnight.
When you see it, when you see yourself and you see it in the timeline.
Yeah. When you see, when I go, when you see what does the editor need out of this situation, and you just do that in the camera, it makes a much, much bigger difference. And
there's a bunch of people that do that. I think Seinfeld did that with Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
Like,
I think Gianni said that, like, yeah, he's actually involved in the edit.
And I wouldn't be surprised.
And there's a bunch of comedians
he
that
is
do that too,
because he gets the last line a bunch of times in that show. There's often a hard cut after whatever the fuck he just said.
I think that's part of the thing that I think that audiences don't recognize is that there's a huge part behind the scenes to help craft these stories and put them all together. Or episodes, movies, whatever it may be. It's a lot, but it's a big part of the process.
Yeah. So the Pikes Peak doc.
I knew that. So that was kind of lied.
It was a good tee. It was a good tee there. You did a nice job.
Yeah.
You've clearly done that before. It's a good tee up. Yeah.
Yeah. Pikes Peak on the Edge on Motor Trend. So it's our first project for Motor Trend, which is interesting because I know back in the day with Drive, it was Motor Trend was our biggest rival. But now looking at it, it's like it's actually one of my favorite things I've worked on in many years. And doing it during a pandemic was actually...
Because it was Motor Trend or because it's Pikes Peak?
No, because it's Pikes Peak. I thought it was going to be a difficult process, especially when you work with any new client or any new platform. You don't know what it's going to be like, and it was seamless. It was actually great. And initially, it was actually supposed to be just a movie, but it turned into a three-part series because we had such a good story.
Mm. So what is the story?
Yeah, so Pikes Peak on the Edge follows six drivers plus one photographer, Larry Chen, as they go through the process of getting ready, preparing for Pikes Peak, going to practice sessions for Pikes Peak, and then going up the hill. So we broke up the series into those three parts. So it's everything before Pikes Peak, before they even get to the mountain. Then episode two is everything about practice, which is actually where I think is the most fun, most drama. And then the third episode is the race. So everything you need to know about Pikes Peak, all the history, the main characters, the main rivals, an understanding of why Pikes Peak even matters in motorsports. Because you look at Pikes Peak right now, and it's like, oh, shit, yeah, this is the biggest hill climb event in the world. Like, we have something to our name as Americans. Like, this is...
It's weird that we have that one and so few others.
Yeah.
Like, New Zealand has a hill climb every weekend all year.
I know, yeah.
Like, why is that? Like, why can... I mean, okay, they have less people. They have great winding roads all over the place.
Yeah.
But aside from that, because we have unpopulated areas with good winding roads, too. Like, why does America not have more hill climbs?
I don't know. I don't have that answer.
Is it just regulatory,
I think Colorado Springs had a big part of why Pikes Peak exists. It was a tourist attraction, right? The people that founded the city and were there first were the ones that were building out this, like, example of, like, a modern-day, like, adventure that you can take in one day to get to the hill back in the, you know, 30s and 40s, even before that.
Yeah.
Get up to the mountain in one day. That was the goal. And, it's always been part of the history of that area of, like, this brings people to our town, which supports our local community.
I guess that's probably, I guess if you find a motorsport event today that's run on the street, it's going to be grandfathered in, and whatever the town is will depend on it. For
so,
like the Silver State Classic,
Virginia City.
What the fuck goes on in Ely, Nevada?
Yeah.
Other than those 500 people that show up for that weekend,
so
you know?
Silver State
in Virginia City,
Virginia City hill climb.
Yeah. I just found out they have brothels in Virginia City. Did you know that?
Well, it's Nevada, so
yeah. But I didn't know that Virginia City had brothels.
I don't know.
It's got to be some fucking some fucking dusty ass fucking shit in them brothels. Yikes.
Back on topic, Matt.
just saying. Most interesting thing about Virginia City, by the way, is that they have brothels. That's
the road is awesome. The road is
awesome. Yeah, the 314, the Virginia City Hill Climb.
How do you remember the names of... Damn. Okay.
I have a head for that type of thing.
I'm trying to think of what else. There's
I can't remember to, like, pay my taxes on time, but I remember a road I drove at a press lodge.
Silver State
years
Classic,
ago.
Pikes Peak, Virginia City Hill Climb, Targa, Newfoundland. What are the other, like... road-based events in
They've got some that new one in Sun Valley. What's the one where the cars go real fucking fast?
I don't know.
Oh, there's also the Sand Hills one in Nebraska, which is, I think, run by the same people who do the Silver State.
Okay, yeah.
Which is like a, I guess you'd call it more of a street sprint than you would a hill climb.
Right.
In New Zealand, anyway, they referred to hill climbs that weren't on hills as street sprints,
right,
basically.
Right.
It's a.
So I'm thinking like hill climbs in general, Malvern, Morgan, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's like notorious of, you know, the three-wheel, why those cars even existed
right.
to begin with, but. Yeah, Pikes Peak. Well, there's Mount Washington. Forgot about that.
That's a rally, though. Isn't Mount Washington part of a proper rally?
Still considered a hill climb, though.
I guess it is.
Yeah.
It goes up a hill one way. But one day, you know what would be fucking G?
What?
They start racing down.
Yeah.
One day, it's going to be, you know what I mean? I just like change it up. Let's see what's up.
That's hard.
Let's see if you can gravity this bitch.
Reddit just had a Toge video from, Toge film from some in-car from the 90s.
Uh-huh.
It was an 86 going downhill drifting. It was one of the most
remarkable. At Pikes Peak?
No. This was in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about hill climbs because this connects back to Dai uh-huh. and why he even does the event. So just to recap, characters, Zort, Dai Yoshihara,
yeah.
Blake Fuller, Sean Bassett, Rob Hollins.
Who's Blake Fuller and Sean Bassett? Those names sound kind of familiar.
Blake Fuller runs, he ran a Tesla. He has the electric production car
record. Oh, that's why. Yeah. Okay.
Sean Bassett.
What's the name of the company, the Tesla tuning company?
That was the one that crashed.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Fuck me.
Yeah, the one that Randy...
Unplugged
Performance.
Yeah,
that's
Unplugged
the one Randy...
Performance, yeah.
That's part of the story, but that's one Randy...
That's public already,
yeah. So Randy...
Spoiler alert, Randy crashed the Tesla.
Yeah, so I'll talk the Japan thing, and then I'll go into the Tesla thing. So Dai Yoshihara, he grew up in Japan. Pike's Peak to him as a Japanese driver was, that's the ultimate event.
Oh, really?
It's weird how
Is
Japan,
that why Monster Tajima made such...
Correct.
Is it culturally different
it's
in Japan?
It's the Toge driving, right?
I guess,
all the mountain driving in Japan, which we've been on. You and I have explored that.
Those roads are very nice.
They're very nice, but then when you think about it, it's right. They don't have anything like the Rockies. So it makes sense as Japanese culture goes, as drivers, you love mountain roads.
This is like our mountain, but way bigger.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and he said that he came here as a drifter, right?
Mm-hmm.
And his family, this is not entirely in the story, but it's part of the story. His family didn't understand. Why are you going to America to go drift and be a professional driver? No one believed him. No one believed in him. And he became successful. Obviously, he won Formula D, and then he went to Pikes Peak last year. He DNF'd. But the fact that he went there...
Mechanical or crash?
Mechanical.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, diff or something.
Uh-huh.
In the same car he went up this year. And he said that even though he didn't finish, his parents saw it in the local newspaper in Japan. And that meant the world to him.
Yeah,
I
know that feeling.
No, but when you think about it,
I know what you mean.
He was famous.
Oh, no.
He was famous for being a great driver, but he was illegally drifting. Bitch, by the way, that's another topic I want to talk about later about... all the burnout marks on every intersection in LA since the last year I've been here. It's incredible.
Just because people are driving like assholes?
Oh, yeah. We'll talk about that later because there's something I want to bring up to you about what I saw, something I saw.
Burnouts or donuts and stuff?
Donuts and stuff.
Yeah.
You see a lot of that.
Yeah, all the intersections. So anyway, so Dai, when he said that to me in the interview, it was oh, my God, this is everything to him. Because it's all about family acceptance.
Uh-huh.
And it's the fact that his family know, his old parents know Pikes Peak. They don't care about drifting. They don't care about anything. It's
Either they know about Pikes Peak or the local newspaper editor knows about Pikes
Peak.
It's
fascinating how this event, Pikes Peak, is world renowned, but no one in America really cares about it. Versus,
that's
our
fair.
Community.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's you see that in a lot of things. You see that in Formula One.
Yeah,
see that in rallying.
Right.
Soccer.
Right.
Football.
Yes.
There's a lot of things that are globally important,
right.
And a lot of these sort of motorsport events. And plus, it's fucking hard. I mean, it's impossible to watch. In person.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Well, rallies in general.
Yeah, of course. It's a real commitment to watch a rally, especially to watch Pike Speak. So I think, do you think that the people caring about the media that is produced at Pike's Peak later, is that more interesting than the actual event and who won and
it's the balancing
there?
Act, right? Because yeah. the investment it takes to do a live broadcast, which is why I think traditional television is going to have to survive, is just for the live events, yeah. unless things like the NBA and NFL go to Amazon Prime and all that. Like the only reason to have a cable subscription right now is for sports, right?
But when you don't even really need that, do you? Because can't you do what do you call it? Like, YouTube TV?
Yeah, there's obviously the majority of America. Think about it like that.
No, yeah. of course, yeah. yeah. Have you sidebar? Do you have cable TV?
Yes,
you do. Okay, because yeah. I don't have cable TV. I got rid of cable in 2012.
Yeah.
At the old house in Playa. I haven't had it since, but I'm really rapidly approaching a cable bill. With all the fucking streaming shit.
The a la carte programming.
This is really getting close to the conversation
yeah. we all had when we started
Remember
driving
the fucking drive and yes. they were like, go fuck yourself, $5 yeah. a month, you greedy fucks. And now yeah. they're like, oh, touch ID to buy, okay.
Yeah.
Indefinite subscribe.
We were way too early to
too
all
early
that.
On
anyway.
That. Yeah. So.
But back to Pike's Peak, yeah. and it's just so impossible to actually get a live stream out of there because of the altitude, because of the yeah. conditions. So what we tried to do with our doc, our miniseries at this point, the last episode, we treated it as if it was live a little bit, right? So it's live to tape.
Uh-huh.
So obviously...
What does that mean? You speed all cameras at fucking 4 a.m. and just use all the data?
No, but yes. Not at 4 a.m. and not all at the same time, but guess who had to go in? And I did this. Went in and actually synced up all the cameras on the mountain.
How many cameras did you have up the run?
2 to 3 cameras per car, plus the helicopter, plus it's...
2 to 3 cameras per race car.
Per race car that we
plus yeah. helicopter.
Plus helicopter. Plus 1, 2, 3, 4, 11 stations for shots.
That's going. A lot.
Yep. And
that's a lot.
And they're not synced. They're all different cameras.
Oh, God.
2 cameras in...
And I assume they don't all go to time code.
They don't. All down to...
So when you said synced up, did you just synchronize, like you sequenced a run from all of this shit?
Yeah.
Oh.
Well,
I pictured somebody driving up the hill with a slate, so it's a little better than that.
So actually for the day, I sequenced the day.
Oh my God.
And yeah, so big credit to like the whole team.
Must be
yeah.
the worst.
But that's like we're talking about interviews and going through stuff. Like the early part of the process of making the movie, I'm actually with Matt, the other director, we're going through all the raw footage to see what we have. And yes.
Like in the movie?
Yeah.
It's like fourth Wally?
No. Like in the post. In post.
All right.
So Matt and I were going through in my apartment for 4 weeks during the pandemic, just like going through all this footage, but it was about
a
week.
It smelled really good
yeah,
in there.
Right? Matt and I, Matt Hardigree and I, we both, every day in my apartment, we went through that day of the race and we synced up every single camera as best we could. And the sync we used was actually the radio. Because every
oh,
single...
Yeah. Oh,
every
yeah,
single,
radio slate. I remember radio slate.
Not just that. We didn't actually do a radio slate because we didn't have full...
Oh, you synced it on radio chatter?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
What a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
Yep. Oh, my God. Everything about this sounds terrible.
It was really rough. But anyway, you one timeline with every single camera on the mountain at that point.
No, it's crazy.
And then
it's...
you go through, like, okay, what happened? And then we created a line cut. So that's like the best stories between them all. And then, and that was our choice about like what's happening, where do people have issues, where do people go off, what was going on, right? The weather, the weather was always an issue at Pike's Peak, and of course it was in this story. And then we just handed over to John Hindhoff, and I gave him very little notes. I just said, these are the people we're following. And
the Radio Le Mans guy.
Yeah, he was there. He was there in real time, but a lot like Drive to Survive for F1.
Oh, yeah, the fake announcer VO. You need that.
It's fake, but it's fake in the sense of... He was there actually doing it in real time.
Yeah, no. But he's tailoring the VO to the story.
That's correct.
They did it pretty slyly in Drive to Survive. I mean, if you know about production,
you
caught it. But if you didn't, you might have thought it was legit.
So
they basically faked a period voiceover.
They did.
So that it was talking about the race that they were showing highlights of in a way that happened to perfectly serve their narrative.
Yeah.
So it was slick.
We handed it over to John, and
He took his payment the same way Ice-T did.
John doesn't like grape Snapple. Anyway, that's a great story. Anyway, so John, we didn't give him any notes, and he just went with it. And that's what we got. There were a few things we changed here and there, but that's how it came together. So we wanted to have the element of like providing the first time Pike's Peak like that live experience with all the cameras possible.
Yeah.
And then we did our own timing and scoring. We matched all the timing and scoring up. So that was a feat in itself. But it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's so much fun. And I bet you you're doing all this on a fucking MacBook, aren't you?
Yep.
You're doing it on a laptop.
Yep.
Ugh. Ugh.
That's how it's
JF. JF stands for JFM. JFM stands for just fucking martyring, and it's all you just fucking make your own life so miserable in so many ways.
But it's like
a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
With don't do that.
97-foot timeline.
No, it was a I have massive monitors and all that. But yeah, working off a MacBook. So it was kind of going into the process, like four or five weeks of Matt.
You have external GPU? You must.
No. Proxies. All proxies.
What does that mean?
So you take the raw footage, fucking like 4K, 8K footage from the helicopter, and then you down convert it to 720. Because you don't need quality, you just need story. You just need audio.
You down convert it to 720.
Yeah. You convert all the footage.
And then what? You just open your project, but you relink the original footage?
You relink.
Sorry, nerds. Yeah. We're going to talk about editing for a second.
You relink.
Because 4K is making my computer struggle.
Yeah, we don't do that.
What do I do?
Yeah. So you make all the
Sorry, Illustrator for dummies.
You take all the footage, you down convert it, make them proxy. So same file name and everything with the
dot
extension.
Proxy.
Dot proxy. Or underscore proxy. And then you can load up Premiere. There's a setting where you can just load up the proxy, so it's all the low res footage.
And then you can just uncheck that and it goes to the real footage?
Yep.
No way.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes.
Oh, that is so cool.
So, yeah.
Sorry, I hope you're still here, folks.
The past three big projects we've worked on have all been that way. All 4K footage. Even the red footage from the helicopter was 8K. I was able to edit that in my laptop.
Wow.
Yeah, so Matt and
this is what happens when people actually teach you how to use things instead of you just like loading them
For the record, I am a terrible shooter. I'm a terrible editor. All I do is I know how to use the software to tell a story, right?
Right, and then
we hand it off to great people like Will Schultz and Will Barber to actually make it pretty.
We can copy and paste.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I can do. I can copy and paste and I can right click apply default transitions.
Yes.
I can do that.
But
you ever seen me edit? That's what it is.
Hardigree and I sat for hours and hours just watching all the interviews, watching all the in-car footage. So with the interviews, it's like you create bins of like, what is this? You ask this question, what is this person talking about? Oh, they're talking about the history of Pikes Peak. Put that in that sequence. Oh, this person's talking about, Rob Holland's talking about Jeff Zort. Put it into the Jeff Zort column. Like all those different elements you put together, and then as you go through the edit and tell the story.
Jeff Zort just said the nicest things to me about Larry Chen.
Yeah,
he basically was like, he's the voice of a generation. But he basically approximated that sentence.
You haven't watched the Pikes Peak doc yet, have you?
No, he texted this to
me. Oh, yeah, no, but he says the exact same thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, he must have that line fucking queued up.
Yeah.
He must. We all have a couple. We've all got a couple. We've all got a couple lines that are
you'll
queued
see,
up like
you'll,
that.
You'll see in episode two, or actually episode one, this is awesome, actually. Jeff goes through and explains how they've both shot the same cars, but at different, or Larry says this, in different years. Like the same, literally, he shot them new and Larry's shooting them vintage.
That's hilarious.
And they go through this and they compliment each other and all that. And then we actually use Larry as the crutch and as the bridge in our second episode with practice. Because practice at Pikes Peak is an absolute utter mess, right? So when you're at Pikes Peak, you never actually race up the whole mountain.
No,
until
they do
race
it in
day.
Thirds,
you
right?
You do it in sections, bottom, middle, top, right?
Yeah.
And then each day of the four practice days, you choose where you want to be. Or rather, there's a system, and then you qualify just on the lower section.
Yeah.
But it's a mess because you got drivers in different areas, different sections. Like it's a
and
hard.
And people have like literally never driven it before as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
The rookies.
At speed.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's an absolute mess in terms of how you even cover that as a story.
Because aren't there? There's like more crashes during practice than there
this
are
year,
during the
this
race.
Year, absolutely.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah.
This year, absolutely. So we use Larry as the crutch to kind of tell that story. So. We brought Larry on as like a secondary supporting character. Like, okay, Larry, I just want to have someone follow you. I don't know what we're going to... Like, when we're choosing the story and the characters, you choose more than you think you're going to need for the whole story. Because you don't know who's going to be dead. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and if you choose six racing drivers...
You don't know.
I could guarantee you that two of them are fucking unusably bad. Two of them, you're really going to be grasping at straws.
So it's a challenge that way. So
when
as,
you're watching the show, guys, look who has the fewest lines.
As a director, Matt and I were trying to like hedge our bets, right?
Yeah.
And Larry was one of those bets where it's like, okay, we don't know what we're going to get, but we want to tell his story because he's on the mountain. He knows the mountain better than anyone else, and he's the one that's experiencing it different from the drivers. He's on the side of the fucking mountain, right?
Yeah.
So we just had him and his shooter just follow him through the practice week. Everything from literally him waking up in the morning, rolling
out of bed.
Yeah,
I bet you got gold. I bet you had ramen. So much usable footage that you could probably make a second side movie out of it.
Well, no, I don't think that much, but it was perfect to tell the story. He was the crutch to end the bridge to kind of connect all the dots on the side of the road and explain, like, even Larry, who's fit and has done a lot of races in his life, been around the world, like, he's exhausted and out of control, out of breath. Like
14,000 feet is real.
Yeah. We had on the first day we were shooting, we were in a delay. We're like, what's going on? And in the distance, you see a helicopter coming. I'm like, what? Practice days, there's no helicopter for no camera helicopter. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, someone's getting airlifted. And we're like, oh, there must have been a crash somewhere down below. And the helicopter lands, takes someone out. We're like, who crashed? We're like, no one crashed. That was a photographer. He fell off the side of a cliff. I was like, what?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Is he okay?
He screwed up his head, and he was pretty messed up. Yeah. So, like, I don't know where the fall was exactly, but he fell.
Falling off a cliff onto your head sounds bad.
When you think about it like that, it's like, you know, we work with Tom. You know, Tom is an extreme athlete in his own regard. Let's put it like that, right?
Yeah.
He'll ride 50, 60 miles on his bike.
Yeah, he's an endurance athlete for sure.
Right. But even he
gets winded up there.
Even he, at altitude, was having issues. And what you don't realize...
I smoked a blunt at the top of Pikes Peak 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Big mistake. I'm not fucking around. It was a big mistake.
I felt
fucking terrible for about a half an hour. It was really bad.
It's one of those things that once you have altitude sickness, there's only one way to solve it, and say get to the bottom.
Yeah.
And it's hard to convey that as a storyteller on camera because, like, it's not a thing you can see.
Yeah,
it's not like you can't see oxygen. You can't see that. So...
Speak for yourself. I can see the Lord.
Anyway, so that was like a big part of the story. Is like, how do you visually showcase how tolling this is on people? Because drivers, they're running oxygen. They're fine. They get to the top. They've had oxygen in their blood. They've been alchemated, right?
Can you show
the
overlay?
What is the altitude at the peak there?
14,000.
14,000.
Yeah.
I've skydived a couple times. Probably maybe you guys have.
Twelve and a half thousand
is the highest you can do down at Lake Elsinore.
Yeah.
And you don't you can't breathe up there.
Yeah.
And you guys are just hanging out like endurance racing higher than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, at the top.
Sorry for the side.
No, it's true. It's true. So
it's really
the top. The top half. It starts at what, 9?
9.2. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So, yeah, you're already at the starting line. If you come from sea level, you're in rough shape.
Over the summer, Hannah and I did this hike. We did, you know, adventure drives with Rob. And then we ended the second half of it. We did a hiking trip, you know, on the way back. And we hiked at Deer Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in Park City, Utah. And we did a hike that started at 9,800 and went to like 11,700.
Mm-hmm.
We fucking couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. We couldn't get to the... And we had just done multiple Grand Tetons hikes and like... But we literally got like 3/4. We were like, I can't fucking breathe. We got it like... And it was so gnarly.
You know Loveland Pass, Colorado?
Yeah.
You know that there's that trail up the
little
mountain?
It's the best blunt ride in fucking... in the Rockies.
Tom, Will, and I, as like, just for fun, we wanted to hike... that little hill on top of Loveland Pass.
Uh-huh.
It took us 3 hours.
It's like 100 yards.
Right? It was like a little under a mile.
Yeah.
But 3 hours for that.
Yeah, it's nasty.
And it, all because altitude. That's
it's
like
12 something, I think. Yeah.
So,
was it snowy too? Or was it
winter?
Yeah,
snow. Yeah, and cold, windy. But that's the thing with
I've skied that before.
You can ski
the back down
country,
and then
there's a lot of avalanches there. It's sketch.
When I was there was a bunch of people doing it. It didn't seem shady.
Okay, all right. I remember every time I drive through
I'm pretty risk averse, honestly. I don't do a lot of really sketchy stuff. And if it really seemed sketchy, I probably wouldn't have done it. There was a bunch of people doing it because you'd shuttle each other back in your car.
Yeah. There are people that with the pickup trucks that take like $5 to bring you back up.
Yeah.
It's a cool little place. But anyway, back to Pikes Peak, it was like that was the hardest part of telling the story. It's like, how do you showcase how, like, yeah, it's a dangerous road. Yeah, you can fall off the side, but like, it's physically towing on you and on the cars. That's why the electric cars do so well, of course, because of they don't need oxygen. And Larry told that story for us, right? Because he was a fucking mess. Like, he was a mess. And he does that all the time. He's done Pikes Peak many years. And that's all.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad, like, Larry. Seems like a good relief character from just the like the intensity of the racing driver.
Right.
Because he's obviously, Larry is, you know, he's working very hard. He's very busy. Obviously, he's a professional.
Right.
But, you know, photographer intensity and race car driver
totally
intensity,
different. Totally different. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you need those different kind of angles.
It was a good, I'm trying to think if there are any drivers that are like, Colin's great to hang out. You know Rob. He's great.
He's
chill. He's just got his program. But when he's outside the car, he's chill.
Yeah, he's fine.
But the intensity between the Porsche battle with Donahue and Donner and Zort this year was the 935, the two GT2 Club Sports were, it's crazy. It's good.
I bet that's going to be great. Did it come out yet?
It's already out. Yeah, it's already out.
It is? Okay.
Yeah, it's good.
I have to download it this weekend.
But back to, I wanted to bring this up because this is something I want to talk to you because, you know, I come out here like once every few months, especially now, not that often, but I've been out here a lot, mm-hmm. right? And the one thing I noticed this week when I came here was how much rubber there is at all the intersections around LA recently.
There's a lot.
It's insane.
Yeah.
And further to that point, I was out shooting yesterday in the canyons, and I noticed there were a lot of people that just double cross yellows. It's gotten crazy how much, and especially on like Big Dahonga and all the drift marks and everything at the sign.
Well, yeah, the turnouts, the paved turnouts in the Angeles Forest, there's certainly lots of rubber there.
I'm not even saying that.
You're talking about in the city.
In the city and then on corners.
Right.
On corners.
I don't see that. Because I don't go in the canyons when there's people in the canyons.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
Yeah.
Like, if you see my videos, you're always like, hey, why are there no people? It's because I'm up there. As soon as the sun cracks the sky, that's when I'm there. And so you're not going to see that.
Why is that? Why do you do that? Is there a reason?
So there's no people.
Yeah. So is it because you've seen some of this stuff? Have you seen?
Yeah. I don't want to be up there. I mean, this isn't new. I've been doing this for years.
No, I know. But for me, it's like
Don't go in the forest on the weekend.
Okay.
Period.
Yeah.
I won't. And I don't. I try not to drive a Malibu in canyons in the weekends either. Like if I want to go drive, it's 5:30 a.m. weekdays.
But I remember like 10 years ago when we were coming here, it was nothing like that.
I don't necessarily think that's true.
Okay.
For one, I think that the closing of the snake,
okay,
because the snake is closed permanently now. So
permanently, I thought it was just for a few months.
No, it's closed permanently.
Why?
When they closed it for a few months, the temporary closure, the neighbors figured out how to make it permanent.
Whoa!
It's not like they didn't put up a sign that says permanently closed.
Okay,
they'll just never. It's just an indefinite.
Because of the driving?
Because because it's a great excuse for them to not. The neighbors to not have cars go on that road anymore.
Yeah.
Personally, I think they should gift that road as a cycling park.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Let the cyclists have it. No cars forever, and you can have your hill.
They do that
in
Colorado, too. Yeah. I've noticed a lot of roads out there that they will shut down for a Saturday mornings. Or like in New York, they have the green streets. Like, that's a great idea.
The car cyclist animosity is like the dumbest shit ever. Like, and I would love for cyclists to have a road.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And I don't get that road's like,
anyway. Even down here in Venice and San Marco.
I don't necessarily want to say that the canyons have gotten worse. People are always crossing fucking double yellows. People drive like assholes.
Why do they? I don't understand
idiots.
Why people like don't understand how
because,
sketch that is.
Because in their very limited sampling of data, they aren't dead yet.
Yeah.
This is not a defense of them.
Yeah, I get it. Okay.
But that's the minds, you know.
Yeah.
Why do you fucking do emails on your phone with the autopilot thing in game?
Yeah.
Because in your very limited sampling of data, you're not dead yet.
So let's explain. Let's talk about the intersections all throughout LA. Just
that
being full
is.
This is all the
takeovers.
The takeovers, right? What's it? What else is it called?
Takeovers.
That's
is pretty
it.
Much
okay.
it.
Yeah.
Street racing.
There's been some more of those because I don't know if it's because, you know, the traffic has been lighter in general.
Yeah.
There's also been fewer police around.
Really?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. It's Die Hard 3 rules, right? Where the cops are into something. You can steal City Hall.
That's
very good. Cops are all into something.
That's it.
It's Christmas. You can steal City Hall.
God, that's like one of the best
little
movies.
Little Goomba kid. Yeah.
And then Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
Oh, I realized something. Yeah.
Nice.
That's a good
idea. I do think that there has been a reduced presence around.
There's the LA Street Racing Task Force. We did a story on this.
I know. And yeah, I don't know.
Like,
I don't know.
There's this whole
that.
New thing where it's a felony now, where they take your car if you're street racing or something.
I haven't heard any follow-up stories about a mass seizures.
I don't know, dude,
of cars.
I haven't been in LA in like 6 months since the pandemic started, and
I mean,
it's
look,
a big difference where I come in and every intersection that just has rubber all over it. It's nuts.
I mean. Maybe
cars are just more.
Maybe
powerful.
I honestly, this is one of those things where if you see the puppy every day, you don't notice that it's gained 50 pounds since the year. You know,
dude, it's been a huge.
I mean, I will say that where I live in Venice,
yeah,
there has been a massive increase in people who drive like shitbags around my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
There has been that,
like with good cars,
like. With muscle cars,
okay.
modern muscle cars.
Okay, yeah.
And there's a stop sign right a couple houses down from my house, and I don't know what it is about people doing like full bore drag launches at this stop sign.
This is,
but
this
they
is
just do it. Don't say the name
of
the road.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Is it the main road?
No, the road I my road.
Oh, whoa.
Where
okay.
my house is, not
okay.
the main road.
Okay.
It's like, what are you even doing here?
Yeah, okay.
And so, and also, I mean, right in front of the shop.
Yeah.
I mean,
constantly.
It's constant.
Okay.
I mean, just people.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really blame them. I'm not mad.
Okay.
In front of my house, I'm a little.
I don't know. It just feels like there's like this attitude of like we could do whatever we want now.
Well, there kind of is.
Yeah.
There's that. That's
it's the
true.
Wild West for sure.
There is a reduced police presence when it comes to the
really?
Motorists. Yeah, I would say that there is. Yeah.
Hmm.
And I don't know. I don't necessarily know. What to attribute that to?
Yeah, I know. It just you live here, right? You live here, like you guys.
I haven't
may
personally
see it.
Seen
it was
that many more drifting in the
dude,
drift marks in the intersection.
I drove.
I don't know where were you? Downtown?
Just around here, even around here, and even in Santa Monica and some of the intersections in the back section of Santa Monica. I've seen.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know. Hit me up on Twitter if you've been drifting around LA. I'd like to.
it's not just. Sorry, that's a takeover thing. Like the intersection takeover
thing is what
I'm noticing the most.
I know
like,
that.
I've noticed that like,
from time to time.
The difference between 6 months of last being here and seeing it now, it's one thing that stood out to me. And
really?
I was like, I need to talk to Farrah about this because like, I cannot believe how much there is.
I mean, I think it could just be that the streets are a lot quieter because businesses are closed.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, when the streets are really a lot quieter after dark.
Yeah.
Because people aren't going to restaurants.
Yeah.
People aren't going to bars and clubs and movies and stuff like that.
Right.
So during the day when you're driving around and I'm driving around, you know, the traffic's a little lighter, but it's a little, it's fairly normal on the roads.
Right. Yeah.
At night, it's quiet.
Right.
After 7-8 o'clock, the roads get quiet.
But like back up in the hills.
Which actually, by the way, at the current traffic levels, LA's road system is really well designed.
Yeah.
How do we keep it that way?
I mean, I don't know. You know, better mass transit, obviously.
Work from home.
Work from home.
Yeah.
Hannah can't wait to get back to an office. She's fucking going crazy working from home.
But even up in the mountains, I was seeing, like, even there are some sections where I've seen drift marks, linking corners.
Yeah, I have as
I'm
well.
I'm like, holy shit.
I have as well.
That's nuts.
Yeah. But that doesn't surprise me. Because I once shot a film with Thad and Zach about an Aston Vantage, and we shot it all night.
Yeah.
It was a night. We did. We were like, let's do a night shoot.
I vaguely remember this.
And we were out there all night.
Yeah.
And we were on the turnout that I call European Car Corner, because it's the cover of every European car magazine is filmed on that.
Yeah.
The big Angeles Crest turnout.
Yeah,
how the
hell is that?
We were, I was there for like 12 hours.
Yeah.
And I saw one car go by.
Yeah.
In 12, I mean, so if someone is going out at night and having some kind of lookout and doing some kind of toge, morally, I am not opposed to that.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
People
on a Friday morning cutting double yellows.
It just takes one person.
That's your Friday morning after Jay's gathering at Newcomb's Ranch.
Hey, wait a second. We promote respect the crest.
Of course you do. Of course
we
you
have
do.
A very good relationship
but
with
I'm
the
just
agencies
saying
that patrol the Angeles
that's
crest.
That's like the only time during the week when there's like kind
traffic.
Of a gathering.
Yes.
Traffic is about that time.
But they're at least all going to the same place with the same intention.
Understood.
Yeah.
Understood.
I've gotten very mad at people. Right then and there, if I see them fucking crossing double yellows.
That's my biggest pet peeve. That's my biggest pet peeve.
I don't give a fuck how fast you go if you stay on your side.
Yeah. That's my biggest pet peeve because we all know situations where things can go, just go.
Yeah. What, that picture, was that new, the picture you posted, the Mustang hitting the ambulance? Was that from Friday?
Sunday. was from Sunday, but yes, that was very real.
Tell what happened there.
Okay,
this was a and you can pull it up on your Instagram if you want. Porsche Life underscore 111 is it underscore?
No underscore.
Porsche Life 111 is Jay Ryan's Instagram. And he fucking posted a picture the other day, and I was like, "What the fuck is going on? Where was it?
Here, oh my there. God! Oh my god!
Look at this! So, this is so crazy!"
So here's what happened. This is actually the second part of what happened here. There was a motorcycle versus automobile incident near the Falls area, where you can see the steps where mm-hmm. cars are always turning in front of bikes. That's what happened. This ambulance was responding to that call.
Oh,
and
no.
coming up the crest.
Okay.
And this Mustang driver, that is a Mustang, folks. That's the front,
yeah, that looks
front
like
left
a,
to front left.
That's an S197 Mustang.
Very, very common tail, just went over the line there. And they made contact.
I think it's just
and it was not great.
Community has to patrol itself.
I mean,
like if you see shit, people crossing double yells, like I think it's the obligation of the community to call that out.
Yeah.
I will say the ambulance driver got out and treated the guy from the Mustang. That's a
whoa.
That's
okay,
really?
real and true
wow.
story. So shout out to all the people.
Wow, that's a fucking pro.
Patrol the crest. Thank you.
Oh look, Zuckerman, top comment. Referrals welcome. Yeah, I'll fucking take all his money and his fucking dog's money and go buy another fucking jet.
Whoa,
Zuckerman,
yeah,
what a G.
Crazy.
That's crazy.
Isn't that nuts? Yeah. Oh my god. Yeah. Don't stay on your side, people. Don't yeah. be a fucking asshole.
By the way, this shot doesn't show it, of course, but if you went to the wide, the Mustang had racing seats and the harness bar and the whole
oh,
thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and yet stock wheels, stock rubber, stock brakes, if you look at that picture.
I was at a Shell station at 4 o'clock in the morning the other night, or other morning, and I saw an NSX with a guy in a racing suit. Stock NSX.
In a fucking fire suit?
Yep.
Driving gloves
is enough.
He was going
up Angel's Crest?
Yeah. He was getting gas at the time, but yeah.
A new NSX?
Yeah.
You take a picture?
No.
This was not Friday, I'd
there
like
was
to say.
A guy back in the day when we used to do the Gotham Dream Car Sprints, which was like autocross in a parking
yeah,
lot
yeah,
with either
yeah.
a Huracan or a Ferrari 430. Not Huracan, Gallardo
yeah,
or a 430.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was like $120. I mean, yeah. it was very entry-level kind yeah. of stuff. Multiple people showed up with fire suits
and gloves
and even when they saw what the event was,
they kept it on.
They continued to put that fire suit on. Yep. Yep. You know, I was watching the other day, I was on the elliptical and I was thinking about when I was watching old No Reservations.
Yeah.
Second season of yeah. Anthony Bourdain, No Reservations.
Yeah.
And, you know, obviously I'm a huge fan of Bourdain and Parts Unknown and, yeah. and how they
still
craft stories.
Yeah.
Still a fan, obviously. I say was because he's dead, not because I'm not yeah. anymore. But, man, the first, it's amazing if you go back to the early No Reservations, how much more formulaic they were, mm-hmm. and B, how much, worse he is at like asking people questions and interviewing people.
You told me you saw him once at a live event and he was terrible on stage.
I did, and yeah. it kind of turned me off to yeah. him until after he died.
Yeah.
I saw him do on his like book tour yeah. at the Pantages Theater in LA. It was sold out. Yeah. They were selling cookbooks like fucking crazy in the lobby, and he did 90 minutes on stage. And it wasn't good.
I think he just doesn't. He didn't care.
There's I don't know if it wasn't not
because
care.
I know he cared about the shows. He did yeah. care about the shows. And I remember this way back when. You remember I think I sent it to you. I reverse engineered.
No, I know. I kept it.
Yeah.
I have it somewhere still. You reverse engineered No Reservations literally to the second.
Yes. To see how much voiceover, how much B-roll, how much narrative there was. And
the
it was,
takeaway from that was that there was like 18 minutes of him walking around aimlessly.
Yeah, and 60 to 70% of every episode was just voiceover.
Well, so that was what I learned and what was hammered home when I saw him live. I went, oh, he's a writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized when I went back to the episodes, he almost never says anything profound in person, ever.
No, he asks questions.
He asks a lot of questions. He lets these people talk.
Yeah.
He obviously goes back to his hotel, reflects, take notes,
yeah.
and records. Anything controversial or really thoughtful was done
yeah.
in voiceover later, but it was even more accentuated in the
yeah.
very
he's
early
a, he was a wonderful writer. He,
yeah.
He, and
but he couldn't do it live.
Yeah.
Which I fucking can. I went with Hannah and after,
you're the reverse.
After fucking 30 minutes, she goes, you would she goes, if that guy on stage is the person that you are idolizing, she's like, you are way better at doing that than he's doing fucking
well,
right
now. It's like
now,
Spinelli. So like, we all like laugh with Spinelli when he says this weird things on stage and everything, or falls on stage, or what it might be. But like, you go behind the scenes with him writing and you see how he writes and tells stories. It's like,
that's why people should do the thing they're good at.
He's an incredible writer.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just like the Bourdain thing is like, he just wrote it.
Yeah.
You know?
He wrote it and then he could read it into a microphone later and make it sound really good. But in person, he didn't really have it until kind of the end. And
There was iteration. There was no reservations. Then it was
parts unknown.
It was layover.
Oh yeah, the layover.
Then parts unknown.
Yeah.
There was a few other small.
Cook's Tour was the really early one.
But I think all 0.0 produced it.
Yeah.
And Helen Cho was producer. Like helped build him into that position. Like it took a lot of evolution to get it to that point. But respect.
If Carl lived, he would have done it better.
Yeah.
That show.
Might have taken it over.
Not as political, but that show with Carl, because I don't know if he could write, but God, did he have it in person. He could fucking, I mean, to listen to that guy explain the organizational structure of the criminal underworld is, I mean, just unbelievable.
Meeting him for the first time at your wedding, do you ever tell you this story?
Uh-uh.
It was a crazy story.
Were you at the table where he was remaking all the food?
I came early. Yeah, yes, I was. I was.
You were very lucky.
He held my head back and shoved food in my mouth.
If you were sat at Carl's table at my wedding, you were very lucky.
It was awesome.
He turned all the food into other food.
That was already great food.
He was like mixing stuff, like not in a plate, but like on the table. Like, what are you doing? Just pouring stuff out on the paper. Like, what are you doing? Anyway.
That's awesome.
I met him at the bar. I came like 3 days earlier, like 2 days earlier or something. I was there early because I drove up with Sarah. And I was just sitting at the bar. And I was like, oh, I kind of recognize him. I ordered a drink. He's like, who are you? I'm like, JF. He's like, you know Matt. I'm like, yeah. And I've known him for quite a few years. And like the conversation from there, like it was crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it just went down this path. Like he was a dude that just wanted to talk to someone.
has always got something interesting to say.
Yeah.
I just was yesterday. I was watching while I was eating lunch in my office. I watched his review of Outback Steakhouse. So good. It's so fucking poignant.
Was it good?
Yeah. Did you ever watch any of this?
No. It's
Carl
amazing.
Would sit there with his phone and order like 10 things off the menu at a bunch of like Chick-fil-A and Cracker Barrel out, and he'd review the food. And sometimes he'd shit on it in hilarious ways. And other times, I mean, when he made, Carl Ruiz's review of Outback, when he ate the fucking, the Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah.
He was just like, this is perfect. He's like, I would kill to have an appetizer like this. Any chef would kill to have an appetizer like this. They're lying if they tell you differently.
He loved fast food. I remember part of that thing at the bar, he like ordered Dunkin' Donuts, like 4 dozen donuts to just have on the table. Like, what do you do? And then pizza the night after your wedding.
That
he
was, after our wedding, he ordered $300 of Domino's to the hotel bar. For everybody, not for himself. And then somebody was like, chef ordering Domino's? And he did 20 minutes on why Domino's is actually good for society and should be respected. Yeah. It's fucking beyond reproach.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, I definitely recommend the channel on YouTube is OMG Carl's Food Show. And I think he did about, you know, on the right, look on the right. He's got McDonald's, Wendy's, Cracker Barrel, Five Guys, Olive Garden.
It's great.
the best line in the McDonald's one, he bites the Filet-O-Fish sandwich. He goes, that fish signed up for that sandwich.
So going full circle, he was working with Opie or?
Like, yeah, he was the co-hosting Opie's podcast.
Okay.
Opie is the best person in the world at finding blue-collar radio talent.
Yeah, okay.
Anthony was like fucking doing HVAC or something when Opie found him.
Yeah, but he had a personality.
Yeah.
Those two worked well together.
They
that was
did.
A good combination.
I mean, Anthony's a creep, but he did characters and voices and that kind of stuff. And Carl was a fucking chef. He's a fucking cook.
So he found Carl just randomly?
Carl was homies with Guy.
Okay.
Fieri.
Yeah.
And Guy came in to do radio with Opie and Anthony, or it might have been after Anthony left. It might have just been Opie.
Yeah.
Did great radio Carl was kind of there hanging out, and Opie was just sort of like, and who the fuck are you? And he was like, oh, this is Carl. And then Guy had to, like, leave, and Carl just, like, stayed and did, like, amazing radio, and Opie was like, hang on a second, you're actually the funniest person I've ever met. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
I'm glad there's so much radio of him. I go back and listen to a lot of, listen to radio of him often.
That would be actually interesting to go get those old O&A episodes as a podcast.
A lot of them are on YouTube.
Really?
You don't actually have to download. You can get them off of YouTube. There's some fucking crazy, like, I go listen to old ones with Patrice O'Neill all the time.
I was listening, that was like a high school thing for you too, right?
Yeah. Well,
like was it XM?
For me, yeah, it was college.
It was college.
Yeah.
It's just like some of the best entertainment I've ever had in my life. It was like
Patrice was the super legend. Yeah. What do you got coming up? Other than
I'm downloading
the film. You taking a break?
I am done for at least 2 weeks.
Nice.
This year has been actually.
You're going to go to Jersey?
My two friends from college are sailing their sailboat from New York to Puerto Rico.
They're in Florida
right now, so I'm going to probably go see them for the holidays.
Are you going to do the sail?
Yeah, well, they're already in Florida.
Are you going to go to the last part, to Puerto Rico?
Yeah.
That's sick.
Yeah.
What kind of boat?
It's a cat. It's like a 56-foot cat.
Oh, big, like a lagoon?
That's actually, I think
Lagoon
exactly.
56?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the double hull?
Catamaran,
that's cool.
Yeah. If you want to live on a boat, I mean, you can't beat the privacy,
right?
Well, because you get the middle section is your living area and your kitchen. It's nice and big, and you've got your front and your back decks, and then the staterooms are down in the hulls.
Yeah.
So you get a front and a back. So it's four bedrooms usually, sometimes even more, and probably four bathrooms as well. It's probably got
that's awesome.
Three bedrooms. Three bathrooms.
Okay, yeah. So what is in the fourth section? Is one
storage.
Of
them? Storage. Long journey and all
that. Yeah, so that's like the boat that I chartered in Tahiti.
So that's like, it's amazing because they're both some of my best friends. They actually be my roommates when they got married. That's funny. They're working remotely, and they do it all through satellite internet and everything. They've been able to continue to work
from the middle of the ocean.
Yeah.
So the satellite internet is good enough
For email and stuff.
Yeah, Excel documents.
Yeah, absolutely. So they've been doing that
for the past two and a half months,
and they figured it out. So
super G.
Yeah, so I don't know. This year has just been like incredibly difficult across the board with the pandemic, and then doing a movie during a pandemic, and then who knows?
Dude, I opened a brick and mortar fucking luxury business.
The business,
I had to finish construction. I mean,
my business middle of this year, I thought the production company, everything dried up, and I was like, oof. I don't know.
I just did our taxes.
Yeah.
Smoke and Tire did 40% better in 2020 than we did in 2019.
Ad sales or?
Because of podcast.
Yeah.
Podcast. And podcast, and because I nailed down a couple of long-term sponsors got us through the Crown and Caliber, Off the Record. Those two really got us through April and May.
Yeah. It was.
But now we finished fucking. We finished hard at the fucking paint, dude.
Good.
Yeah, we're doing like the like 8 videos in 10 days in the second half of December.
But it wasn't easy. So here's the thing: is like I'm looking across the board, like we're getting through it. Yeah, I think this pandemic.
Don't get me wrong; it fucking sucked.
No,
balls.
No, I know, and I there's a lot of people I know that lost their jobs. Yeah. And everything. It's just like this.
Oh, it's like half my friends, dude.
I know.
A bunch of my friends, they didn't die, but a bunch of them had to fucking leave and go to.
Oh yeah. New York, same thing. I've lost a lot of friends, but even
either greener pastures or follow, you know, Vinny, who was working remotely.
He's in Miami now, right?
He's in Miami. He's as much happier because he did a spat in Texas in the middle.
Yeah.
And but yeah, he pretty much was like, they're like, yeah, well, you can't stay there. You've got to come here. So we lost some friends.
And I'm just tired of getting COVID tests. I've done. I cannot wait for my nose to not be violated.
Well, because they get the halfway one or the full Monty.
I've been doing two a week,
pretty much.
So I'm just.
There's one doctor at the place I go because I know if I go and there's one of these doctors that's a little more mellow and they do the halfway up, but both nostrils. When I see the other doctor, the one with the curly hair, and I know she goes fucking like
to the brain,
like Total Recall, like in Total Recall where he's like, Hauser, stick this fucking thing up your nose and it's gonna crawl into your brain. That's what it feels like. It's fucked up.
This is a sign of the times. So I get a COVID test every time I fly at Newark Airport. Terminal B.
Oh, you're flying United too, aren't you? I won't fly United. So, Delta only right now. Ew.
I feel it's like a Cheers episode because everyone there knows me.
They know me too. Up the corner, they're like, because the mask, the Porsche, the Porsche fabric mask. They're like, bus fabric guy.
So I now get the rapid test without an appointment, and it's just like, I skip the whole line. That's awesome. Always do it. So there's one benefit here of having new friends.
New friends in the medical profession.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, I have the same strategy I have for that, what I have for everything else. Get there 20 minutes before the place opens and have coffee with you and be the first in line when they open the door, and you can get the fuck out of there quickly. Yeah.
But
they happen to, there happen to be some good testing places around here, and they do like 12-hour turnaround.
What's upsetting is, why did we not have this fucking 3-4 months ago? I know the answer.
You know the answer to that.
But like, it's been proven that this works. Like, look at Formula One.
Dude.
60,000 tests over the span of 20 weeks and 4 cases. Like, they were able to get the bubble to work. You put fucking great engineer minds.
You're preaching
in
the fucking choir,
bro. I know.
Why didn't it work? Because central messaging works, and we don't have that. Centralized messaging works.
I just cannot believe it. It's just so simple. So simple. And you were in Florida too recently.
Oh God.
Oh my
fucking
God.
Fucking Florida, bro. I got two tests after coming back from fucking Florida.
I was in Daytona and
I fucking wore trash bags down there.
I was
full hazmat
driving
suit
in Daytona, and I'm like, oh, that's a testing center. Long line of cars. People trying to get tested. One side of the street. Other side of the street.
Bar
full of people. It's like, you idiots can look across and see where your day is going to be 5 days from now. Why are you doing this? Yeah. Like, I've heard of people I know in New York who were, they needed to have the social scene. They needed to have it. They needed that in their life.
There's
and
been a
chosen
bunch of these fucking articles coming out recently that are all like, real sympathetic to the people that just needed their New York party scene.
Right, so they all flew to Florida. That's what I was getting at. And all the New
or
Yorkers
Cabo.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, what are you doing? Like,
it's not the right move.
Your life depends on having these social interactions where you're in a group environment where you actually don't actually have any type of conversation of any kind.
You're preaching to the choir, bro.
I'm sorry. I'm just, it's my rant.
I'm not,
I get so worked up about it. It's
I'm in
stupid.
LA, I want to talk about it.
It is
just
dumb.
So stupid.
It is dumb. Central messaging, it works. We don't have it.
Anyway.
Other places do.
Anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, my pops is on the board of directors at CVS. And so, you know, this is not insidey. This is just up to date on, you know, vaccinations and stuff like that. But apparently the biggest challenge with this vaccinations right now, these first two, the Pfizer and the Moderna, is that I forget which one is which in terms of this, but one has to be kept at minus 60, the other has to be kept at minus 30. Mm-hmm. So the fucking dry ice business right now is like overcranked, like full time. Like dry ice is actually the holdup right now until this Johnson & Johnson one is ready, which does not require super refrigeration, just regular refrigeration.
Yeah.
Fucking wild stuff. Anyway,
life.
It's miserable. It's fucking miserable. But, you know, it's sad to see, like, you know, so many things closed and all that, and people who own, like, to not have central messaging and not have the kind of relief that businesses that are forced to close need.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like people are like, let us open so they can risk themselves. It's because they can't pay their fucking rent. They can't, you know what I mean? If we have relief for this kind of stuff.
It's also, I think there's a big, I think we're going to see a big problem with mental health. And like, I think when we get the data in terms of alcoholism and drug use and everything that's going on right now, it's like,
there's a reason house arrest is a punishment for crimes.
Yeah. I'm really worried about that for our future next year, of like how much of a toll this is going to take on healthcare and families and people we know who are dealing with stuff, like people who lost friends. Like I lost friends.
Yeah.
Like it's
definitely
rough.
Affected things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. I can't wait to watch the movie. Thanks for coming.
Series.
Huh?
Three-part series.
Right? Sorry. Yeah, series, not a movie. It's on Motor Trend On Demand.
Motor Trend On Demand. Yep.
Okay. Get it in the Motor Trend app and all those places.
You can sign
you
up for
it.
Free, get it for 7 days and see how you do.
Do you want to promote the Haggerty thing too, or is that a separate, totally separate deal?
No, we can reference it because it's, I think Kamisa referenced a little bit of it as well, right? We'll be creating a whole lot more content on Haggerty on Haggerty Video next year. So that's been something I've been working on for the past 8 months, even before the pandemic started. That kind of threw things off into a spin. But, a lot of video content coming from Haggerty.
Word. JF Musial on Instagram. JF Musial on Twitter. Anywhere else?
I don't care.
That's it. You don't care.
Thank you, Matt.
Watch the series. I bet it's great. It's probably shot very beautifully. I will check it out myself.
Thank you, Matt.
You must send me the screener.
Yeah, sure.
I actually think I have Motor Trend On Demand as my... as one of my many recurring app subscriptions.
The one that's put you over the edge for cable.
Right? Yeah. Finally back at cable. When I went to my parents' house in South Carolina recently, I had two COVID tests at either end of it. I hadn't seen my parents in a year, and so I went to see them. I decided I would do the safest way I could, but I was going to go see
You don't
them.
Always explain this, but I know from what I hear from Zach, you take a shit ton of COVID tests, everything you do, right?
I take a lot of COVID tests.
We're all in the same boat.
I'm like twice a week. It's a lot. Yeah. And it's not like I'm doing that so I can go hang out, and I do it so that literally this, so this, I can do this. Yeah. That's all. Yeah. And when I had to fly to shoot Sorted and to go to see my parents, but they have cable, and I have to admit, I kind of liked seeing the guide and like choosing something to start. Mm-hmm. From just an icon, and that's hard. What am I going to watch? I don't know.
Okay, so
find a new thing. But like something about being on the cable.
We have a few
is,
minutes to talk about this.
Yeah,
I think linear programming is going to see a surge again.
I'm with you on this 100%.
I think when we are faced with too many options, an oversaturation of options, our mind does not know what to do with it, and we just want to sit back, lean back, and just. Show me something.
Yeah. I completely agree with
you. Serve me anything. I just don't want to make the decision. Me, in my life as a director and as someone that leads a team, I hate making decisions on my off time. Anyone I'm with, in any situation, I don't care. Just tell me what I'm doing.
Do whatever you want. But
order
tell me
dinner
what
for me. Yeah. That's how much I don't want to make a decision. Yeah. The same thing is true. Like I watch so much content for my job that when it comes to the end of the night, that's why I still have cable. I like the idea of just putting something on.
What if there was a streaming app? No, I'm serious. What if there's a streaming app and that app fed you someone else watching cable? So like my parents, it's literally a person or series of people that is paid to watch things but also channel surf a little bit. Yeah. And you just access their cable feed. You don't get to choose anything. It's just background.
It's like
cable,
the iPod Shuffle.
Background cable TV that someone else is watching.
Are you watching the person?
I'd pay $2.99. No, not them.
You're just seeing their.
You're
feed.
Seeing what they're seeing on TV. Yeah, you don't have to choose anything ever.
Yeah.
I'd pay $2.99 a month to have someone else's cable
no,
feed.
No, but like legit, I think we'll see Amazon or Netflix and something. They'll have a linear feed option of some kind.
That would be cool.
I think the Netflix feed that they're doing these viewing parties now. Did you see that? Like, Netflix has it. Yeah, they're it's like a soft launch or whatever where you can. Me and eight of my friends want to watch the same thing at the same time, so we all have the experience together. That's what tune in at 8 p.m. tonight.
Yeah.
That's when the show's on or whatever.
Yeah,
it definitely. I feel like the option at least will be there. For
I also think there's going to be. I think there's going to be a problem in the fact that you have these streaming services that don't release the data. And you don't know,
we don't know how many people have watched anything.
You don't know, you know, we're in a situation where, like, you know, for years with linear, you're able to see the data. You're able to see the ratings. And now I think that they just have too much control. They're going to have too much control over producers. You know, I remember a story a few years back about Orange is the New Black, right? Mm-hmm. They were up for a renewal, but they didn't have the data. And basically, they're at the mercy.
They couldn't negotiate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to, I don't know where that's going to evolve, but that's a thing. That we have
Well,
to
that's
got to
be a lot more stressful if you have a show. You have no position of negotiation.
Yeah.
You know, you can't necessarily...
I don't know the solution. Yeah. I just know that's a problem.
It is a problem.
Across the board.
Yeah, not knowing how many people are watching the shit that you're making
and just
is
an
tough.
Oversaturation of content. I'm not saying good content. I'm saying bad content. There's just too many choices.
Yeah. So. Agreed. I agree. That's a good place to end.
Yep.
By not giving
Watch
them any more
instead.
Content.
But this is okay. This is just fine.
Yeah. Get the Pike's Peak film on Motor Trend On Demand. I'm sure it's dope. I'll watch
Series.
It this weekend. God damn it. Why do I keep saying that? I think Zach was talking about it the whole time like it was a movie.
It was supposed to be a movie.
Yeah.
And it was turned into a series.
It's going to be a while for me to reprogram my brain.
Pike's Peak on the Edge.
Pike's Peak on the Edge. Motor Trend On Demand. There it is. Jay Ryan. Thank you for helping us out today. Zach was having fucking back pain and last minute bailed. What a bitch. I'm just kidding. No.
Feel better, Zach.
He
Feel
has
better.
The same injury that I had, and it's fucked. It's a fucked injury. Yeah. You're super, super. He is on the fucking Autobahn to surgery, is what he's on right
really?
Now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you, his shit is too far gone for him
young.
To PT it out of it.
Yeah.
And if he just the level of pain he's got, you can't PT that away. You can't do it.
What caused it initially?
I mean, what caught it's a it's
no, but for him
herniated. I don't think he could pinpoint it to one specific instance, but but carrying shit, spinning the wrong way. I mean, there's a million simple ways to shred your spine. It has nothing to do with being out of shape.
I had it 2 years ago
either.
From a karting race with you at GPNY.
Oh, yeah. I think that I don't know if that was the same race where I broke a rib, but I did break a rib karting at GPNY when someone crashed me into
I got T-bones.
Yeah. I got to go back and race more GPNY. I missed that place. Thanks, y'all. I appreciate y'all listening to our show here. Have a good day. Goodbye.